Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies.
Hello. Hello, I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, the show where we help you through the midlife, the menopause, motherhood, and everything in between.
Today we have novelist and musician Louise Wenner.
And she's going to be talking to us about finding your sexy again.
She is, and she's also going to talk a little bit about parenting teenagers as they go into the wild, wild, crazy partying days.
Yeah, that's the bit we all dread, isn't it? But we're both there with that one at the moment, aren't we? But I think before we get into that,
I want to talk about something that's happened this week that just struck me as a learning, a midlife learning. Mm. And I think often when we reach this stage, there's lots of little tiny details that would make our life
good to share
easier if we'd known them in advance. Yeah. So can I just talk about Sunday nights?
You definitely can.
So if you're maybe in your early 40s listening to this and your children are sort of 10, 11 or under, you won't know what's coming on a Sunday night with teenagers. It's the hell zone, isn't it? So around 6 o'clock, everyone that I know, most people, we have a giant, massive family row. Mm. And it's about, is your homework done? Is all your uniform ready? What's happening on Monday morning? Who needs to be where? Have you got the pee socks that you need? And this all sort of builds up. And I think mums maybe feel strangely responsible for it.
Yeah,
and you have this giant argument on a Sunday.
Yeah,
so Sundays become really important.
It's a twilight zone. Yeah, I know what you mean. And I think it is me that's causing it. Because I think it's when they're little, you get everything ready for them. But when you then need them to start getting themselves ready and they just aren't doing it. So you become the nag again and you start nagging. And it's like, you're not happy that it's Sunday evening either because your weekend's over and you've got to go to work in the morning. And then
we're working mums. We've got all our stuff to get ready. And I think it's all of you in the house all at the same time. And when they're little, you're doing their little bath and bed and you know you're going to get like a couple of hours on your own later
to
on.
To watch Paul Dark or whatever.
Yeah. You and Paul Dark.
I love Paul Dark. Yeah.
Or you're just going to be able to go to bed early. It's all going to be fine. But when they're bigger, they don't go to bed and they're still getting their stuff together. And with the kids when they were little, we had a routine. We still have it now. We have our dinner, our tea late on Sunday at 7-ish and we all get together. Everyone has to come. It's just the family. It's pretty regular, even so, get to see everyone. And I thought, why did I make that such a thing? And because I felt so sad on Sundays. And I realised that when I was little, because I think when you're in midlife, you only then begin to look back and you sort of see all these little signs dotted through your life of why you were like you were. Whereas when I was little, my dad worked away from home. We lived in Cornwall. He worked in London for about 3.5 years. And I remember Sunday nights just being this awful countdown to when Dad was going.
Oh.
And I feel like when I was little, I wasn't sad about it.
Yeah, but
in the same way.
Retrospect.
Yeah. Midlife brings retrospect sadness.
Yes.
And you start, because I think you just think about your life and you think, I'm over halfway, I've only got this left, I want to do really great things, I want to make the most of all my time. Why do I feel so sad about this, that, and everything else? Yeah. And you start to, I mean, I don't know about you, Trish, I'm maybe a bit madder than you. You start to question all the little bits, all these little flags you've dropped about times in your life. So we do family dinner, which I love. It's like my favourite thing in the family. I mean, the teenagers sit there and really grumpy because they've got to put their phones down, they've got to talk to me. We used to do favourite part of the day, least favourite part of the day, which they won't do now.
Do you know what I did? Because I found myself in the Sunday twilight zone meltdown situation, and I thought, I've just got to do something about this because I'm the one who's kicking off and causing all these things because they're not doing anything. So I started going to the gym at about 5:30 on a Sunday.
Just to get out.
Just to get out. And I thought, right, I'm going to go and do a spin class. And I assumed that it was all mums like me there, sort of middle-aged parents. And I thought, oh, this is clearly a thing. And actually, what it does, it takes you out of the situation. You come back feeling so buzzy and on a high that you sort of don't care. And it just kind of, everything sort of dissipates and it all becomes all right because you've got a much more positive sort of mindset because you've got all those endorphins running around you. And yeah, that's kind of what I do. But what do you cook? Roast is a bit
of a roast
moment.
As you know, Trish, I am a cordon bleu chef.
Master chef, the professionals.
I'm shockingly bad at cooking. We do roast chicken.
Yeah.
And whatever vegetarian thing they want comes in a tin from Tesco's. And we do some roast potatoes and carrots and stuff.
You're good at it. You do a little bit of
I do, but my children have got quite sort of still got like nursery food taste. So it's all chicken pie, but roast chicken
I
can't go with.
Yeah, chicken pie. Mean chicken pie.
Now, on to our main topic. Today, joining us is singer and novelist Louise Wenner. Louise formed her band Sleeper in 1993. She had 8 top 40 hits, including Sale of the Century. Remember that, Trish?
I loved it. I loved it. I really did. And I think, you know, I just remember you back in the 90s during that whole kind of Britpop explosion. And I also thought it was really interesting that because you were the female lead singer of a band, I'm sure you were probably sort of portrayed in the media and probably within the music industry in a way that men didn't have to be. And I was kind of interested to know about how did that affect how you felt about how you looked, how you portrayed your sexuality?
Oh, it's really, there's so much to say about it. I think it's sort of complicated. I came out of a sort of an ugly teen period, and, you know, I had terrible acne in my teens. I wore really sort of thick glasses, and I sort of blossomed in my 20s, and I was in a band. And of course, when, you know, you're sort of given the rights to the castle when you're in a band, you are suddenly, you become a sex symbol, whatever happens.
Hot. You become hot, Louise.
So I had this sort of flourishing. And what I wanted to do more than anything, I think, was to enjoy it and sort of revel in it a little bit. And I wanted to revel in it in the way that men are allowed to, without it being the absolute central focus on me. And also, I didn't want it to diminish me. And what I found was that the reverse was true. And of course, it became the only thing people talked about. Yeah. And that was all-encompassing. And also, it reduced me in some way in the fact that, you know, people wouldn't ask me about the songs that I'd written or the lyrics that I'd written. So it wasn't, you couldn't be hot and skillful.
Men could.
Of course,
they
always have been.
Men could.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, I would literally get asked, I would go to interviews and they would say, well, how do you feel about sort of men masturbating over your pictures of you in the press? And that would be like an opener.
It's like
that would
being
be an
on
opener.
Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's still there, of course. Yeah.
What I think is interesting, because I'm looking at you here, Louise, you're wearing a really amazing sort of zebra-y fluffy jumper. You've got a leopard print coat, you've got a leather skirt, fishnet tights, and some cool sort of like Dr. Martini type boots.
Yeah.
You would have worn that back
I would
in the,
have.
It's exactly the same. Yeah. So I think for me as well, it's that we haven't changed. Just because we're 30 years older or 25 years older, we're still the sort of same people and we still have the same style aesthetic.
I mean, I think it's really interesting. I was thinking about when I was coming to this, about my mum. So when she sort of turned 50, and my mum, she had worn like a sort of a Marks and Spencer sort of Playtex corset to suck everything in her whole entire life. She never left the house without this corset. I think she ever sort of left the bedroom without this corset.
This underwear as punishment.
And I think she got to 50 and she sort of literally, it was like some sort of ritual. She took them all and sort of threw them all in the bin. And it was almost like, that's me done with making an effort, you know? It was sort of an ending of something. So I think it's very interesting.
But didn't society tell her overtones of we don't need you anymore because you can't have children anymore and you're not, we can't employ you anymore.
Absolutely.
And you're not really marriage material anymore. It's a terribly sad generation.
So, sort of the idea, well, even now though, I think society tells us that we're sort of a bit invisible after 40, aren't we? And certainly after 50.
And we shouldn't even be discussing it. We shouldn't be discussing ourselves as sexual beings. You'll have seen the sketch with Amy Schumer and Julia Dreyfus, is it? And it's My Last Fuckable Year, it's called. And they sort of send Julia off on a boat down a river, don't they? So you're not allowed to be sort of considered sexy anymore. That's it, you're done with. And it's kind of, and we laugh about it, but, you know, you don't see it. You just don't see it around you. And I think it's difficult when you don't see it. And when your sort of body is also changing and, you know, all that stuff's happening, it's hard to sort of reclaim it for yourself. Mm. I think you have to sort of.
And I do think it's reclaiming, because I think in your 20s, you're sort of developing your sense of style and how you want to look. And I think for a lot of people, being sexy in that decade is very much how you should look. Whereas I think when you get to your kind of this age, in your 50s, we know that being sexy and desirable is far more about confidence, feeling self-worth, and just being yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, it feels like it belongs to me. Mm. Now, so it's not rather, we talk about, can you be sexy or not? It's kind of, it's, you know, we're all sexual beings and that doesn't go away. And it's about your confidence. And it's about, and I think it's probably perhaps more true for women as well. It's like, it's what's in your head as well, isn't it? It's very sort of, it's not about, oh, what do I look like in a thong and a peephole bra anymore. It's not that, is it? It's just it's something much richer than that. And I think we don't see enough of that around. We don't just don't see enough of that sort of confidence and cleverness.
All the images, as you mentioned, are of grey-haired women gardening.
Yes. I mean,
that's, the beauty industry, though, and I know this from my point of view and from statistics, is undergoing an enormous shift at the moment, because I think they've realised it's not anti-ageing. We don't want to look younger. We just want to sort out the slightly more dry skin, thinning hair. We just want someone to address our problems and that menopause and midlife does exist.
Absolutely.
For women. We don't want to moan about it. I can't be moaning about things. I just want someone to help me sort these things, but not at the same time to patronise me and tell me that I want to look 20 years younger, because I don't want to look 20 years younger.
It's just, you can't chase that youthfulness. You just can't. It's crazy, isn't it?
What do you think when you see other female musicians who are still in the industry? Madonna, for example, is still in the industry. I mean, she's amazing, and she's still wearing her corsets, and she still looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And she gets so much criticism for dressing the way she does and being the way she is. She must be 61 now, 60 now, I think, Madonna. Which is, I just know, is not levelled at Iggy Pop, for example. It's not levelled at other men who've been...
I mean, I think she's sort of glorious. I mean, it's not, you know, that's not my taste, but that's not the point. The point is that I think sort of women, especially from my generation, you know, I think we grew up a bit rebellious, so we're not going to just sit there and accept what is okay for us now at this age. The fact that she's out there wearing whatever the hell she likes is just in and of itself brilliant. And she's forever sort of challenged the sexual aesthetic, what it was okay for women to admit to like. And she's like, you can't objectify me because I'm doing that to myself. I'm already...
She owned it.
I owned my sexuality, my sexualness belongs to me. And that was very powerful as a kid growing up. And it still feels so now.
I think
now.
It's great as well. You talk about growing up. I mean, we are the generation who we grew up with, the actresses from Sex and the City and Friends and all those amazing women. They're all in their 50s now, aren't they? And they are, you know, they're still rocking. They're still who they are. You just look at them, you think, that is Courtney Cox, that is Jennifer. That's how they are and who they are. Who else do you think is doing that well in midlife?
Oh, God, I don't know. It feels like a hard question. I feel like there's not enough. And I think we just don't see enough women our age generally. Mm. So you need to see them out there being powerful and interesting and creative and artistic and all of the things, you know.
But do you think the music industry has changed in the 20 years you've been away?
I don't
know. In terms of its attitudes to women?
I think it has. I mean, the way that they're written about is different. So I was, you know, I was reading sort of some old copies of The Enemy and The Melody Maker the other day, and they talked about groupies, and they were referring to them as 14-year-old tarts in an article. I just wanted to send it to me and to sort of just as a sort of an old edition to look through. And I was just reading through it, and it's hard to remember what that was like. I mean, it's interesting that we dressed in a sort of slightly androgynous way at that time. So we weren't in sort of slinky tight dresses or any of that stuff, because I think we felt we had to sort of dress a bit like boys to be taken seriously, which is ludicrous, isn't it? So I think there's this sense now that you can do...
It's very annoying.
It is very annoying, but there's a sense you can sort of do whatever you like, and that's exactly as it should be. However the hell you want to play it, you play it.
Given how old you are,
what
stage you are in your life, personal question alert. Klaxon, the menopause.
Yes.
Did that happen? And the perimenopause, which I only found out about in the middle of the storm. idea that was coming.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that? Because you were writing then. You would have been at home.
So I think that's really interesting what you said, that you only found out about that during the middle of the storm. What I feel most looking back on it, because is that I just was unprepared for it. So I didn't know enough about it. So I didn't know what the perimenopause was. And I just felt ignorant of it. I thought, I might get a bit sort of fed up on my periods will stop and that'll be that, you know. But it's just, it's so vast. I mean, so many things that happen to you. One of the things that in particular that happened to me was that I got a lot of pain. So I was in a lot of pain. I had this sort of terrible back and hip pain. I went to osteopaths, I went to physios, I had unnecessary x-rays, all kinds of stuff. And it ranged from someone saying to me, oh, you've probably got, I think you've got spine cancer, you need an MRI immediately.
My God.
And someone else telling me that I was making it up.
Oh, gosh.
And not one of them at any point says, well, actually, you're 51, perhaps it might be sort of hormonal related.
There's a whole thing around female pain that we need to discuss at another time.
I went on HRT and it went completely within 4 months. And I'd been really, sort of taking really heavy painkillers for, you know, over 6 months, and just more than 6 months, but like almost a year. So,
but our bodies do change, don't they? And that's why I think, when you've come through that, it's a good time to sort of reappraise sensuality and what makes you feel sexy and what makes you feel good, because you've changed physically. So
you have
it's
a
kind
new
of
shape.
Your body shape might change. Yeah. Your muscle, you might be softer, but that's quite nice. You know, there's all sorts of things that can happen to your body, and I think it's quite a nice thing to think about that as a, well, how do I explore this in a sort of sensual way, maybe? Nice.
Do you also think, maybe controversially, men do stop looking at you a bit at this age? Not deliberately. And I think flirting, that's all part of life sometimes. And you don't notice it till it's not there, in a way, do you? I've noticed that, I don't know.
Yeah, I've noticed it. I think you sort of become used to it, don't you? It's funny how you become used to it. But I think in a way I felt sort of more invisible when my kids were tiny, you know, that sort of post sort of children.
You're definitely invisible then, yes.
That moment, so it kind of, that's when it sort of kicked in, and that I had my last one when I was 41, so I kind of said with my 40s kicking in, and that first time you go into a shop and someone calls you madam, you know?
Yes.
Well, stands up for you on the tube. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
And has someone stood up for you on the tube, Trish?
Oh God. Oh no, it's like, that's it.
You just go for the jugular? Did you just attack them? I can see that making you quite angry as a person.
I just sat down.
Thank you very much.
Exactly. Why not? Goodness.
Nigella Lawson's 60 next year. Yeah. She's still stylish and lovely and sexy as a woman, and talks about being happy and comfortable. I think this stage of life, one of the points we make in Postcards from Midlife is a second act for many women. So women who divorce after years of maybe not the best, happiest marriage, and women who start different careers, new careers, or begin again. And then there's a lot of us who, I had my last baby at 43, who've still got quite young children around us,
absolutely,
and our second bit of life. Does it feel like a second act for you?
Yeah, very much, because I stepped away from this, from music, so completely, just so to come back to it now at this age, it feels like a bit of a gift, to be honest, to be able to go back on stage and sort of experience it differently. And as you say, I'm all about the joy of performing now. So what it feels like for me and how I feel on stage and how I feel with my band. I'm not sort of worrying about what people are thinking of me all the time. That sort of self-consciousness is almost entirely evaporated.
How does your 14-year-old feel about you being up on stage? I mean, mine can't even bear me to sing when I walk around the house or to do anything that anyone else might look at, because I'm just so embarrassing.
She's the perfect mixture of sort of, on one hand she thinks it's quite cool, and on the other hand she's just mortified. So she's absolutely mortified.
Probably the most embarrassing thing a parent can do, isn't it?
I'm
going to be a rock singer. I'll teach it.
It's our job. It's our job to embarrass them, isn't it?
Could we talk about the other bit of teenage life that will is coming your way?
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of it.
Yeah.
It's really tricky. Is I guess it's the partying. I don't know if it's partying. I don't know what you call it with teenagers, but they want to go out and be independent, and part of that is being exposed to alcohol, drugs, festivals, music, all the things we all went through as teenagers. Mine went to Wireless last year. So the 15-year-old went accompanied, and my 16-year-old went with her boyfriend in a big group. And I was worried about, not so much worried about the drugs and the alcohol, actually. I was more worried about the safety and just things being stolen or her getting lost or not being able to get home. Yeah. There was more
kind of life skill
around.
Stuff.
Life skill stuff, which actually she should have at 16. She should already have
smarts.
Of course, we would have gone without phones or any way means of contacting anyone. At least I feel they've got that now, and they can sort of. And they, I don't know how you feel about your sort of teens and stuff, but they seem to look out for each other in a way that's kind of... Obviously, there's a huge amount of stuff that goes on, but the ones that are good to each other when they're sort of close friends, it's quite easy for us to sort of be sort of quite Luddite about the way they're living.
Yeah.
You know, and saying, oh, it's not like it was in our day. Maybe in some ways it can be better, you know?
Well, it is. I think the phones bring them together, mm-hmm. and I think they perhaps know more about sex and relationships and love than we did at our time, because we have talked to them about it, because we've had to talk about the phone.
Yeah, but they're quite emotionally articulate, I find, in a way that I certainly wasn't when I was that age. So they know lots more than I knew, and they're good at talking. And when I was growing up, my dad used to give me wine to drink, you know, and sort of stuff like that, and he would give me a glass of wine and when I was quite little.
So apparently you can buy alcohol and give it to a child over the age of 4.
What? That seems reasonable.
That is one of the actual legal things. So, yeah.
I think
so basically, it's legal. No, I looked at it on a website. So it's something to do with some children's act in like 1900, where in an extreme emergency, if like your child chops off its hand, you can give them some alcohol to...
I don't know what Trish has taken before she's come on here, but she's talking nonsense today.
Gosh, no, look it up.
If they got their hand off at Reading, they can have a drink. It's all fine.
Exactly. So the law is that 16 plus, you can drink beer, wine or cider, but no spirits with a meal in a pub or a restaurant supervised by an adult.
Oh, yes. My eldest looked that up to tell me that. Yep. She's very specific about that.
Which I think, fair enough. And then it also says it is legal for adults to buy alcohol for children over the age of 4.
So there we go. And that's why I don't cook in the house.
Yes, no knives. No sharp instruments. No, exactly.
Well, we allow, I think probably it was from the age of 40, birthdays or something, glass of champagne. We thought that was, we do drink at home quite a lot.
Yeah.
And we're quite happy. I've always been quite happy for her to go to, she's 17, to take alcohol to a party. She might take 4 beers in a thing. They seemed to have been drinking from the age of about, as far as I can tell, from 14 onwards.
That seems about the average age,
when they go out and when they come back. And there's been times when they've been quite drunk and probably learned from it. But what I would say is I don't think teenagers, I say they, like there's some special alien group we're observing this generation. What are they, Gen said, it doesn't seem to be what they're going out to do.
Is that because it doesn't feel as illicit as it did for us, maybe? Or it doesn't feel like
I think if you've got... I was interviewing my son about this, or asking him about it, and he was saying that, well, you just... First of all, you have to accept that your kids are going to be drinking from 15. So if you're one of those parents that is like, you're not drinking... He said that those are the kids that then go to the parties and get absolutely hammered as quickly as they can.
Right,
whereas
that makes
the kids
sense,
that are kind of talking to the parents about it, maybe occasionally having a beer if they're 15 or 16 at home with their parents, they're not as kind of desperate.
Don't ban anything. That's my... Well, we wouldn't be friends without booze, would we?
No one
we wouldn't
would be
come
frankly,
up with this podcast from the midlife without
this was discovered on
alcohol.
Quite
frankly.
Wine situation. Yeah. I think, Lorraine, you were probably a bit of a naughty teenager.
Well, I grew up in a very small village. There's not much to do. I think teenagers who grow up in the country maybe have a wilder time than teenagers who grow up in town. I had FOMO as a teenager before FOMO was a thing. So if I went out, I really didn't want to go home because I didn't want to miss out on anyone else staying.
Boozing? Were you boozing?
I was boozing.
What were you drinking? Boozing. Can you remember?
Diamond White.
Oh, God. Do they still make that?
At the bus stop before we were picked up by my friend's brother and taken into Plymouth.
So the point of all this really is that we know what goes on.
We know what goes on, which gives us the fear. Yeah.
And I think just to pick up on a few extra points that we probably didn't get into there with Louise, I think one of the things that you need to do with your kids, which my kids have said have been really helpful, is like talking about the dangers of drinking and just making them aware that if they do get drunk, they're going to be putting themselves in a kind of vulnerable position, which, you know, is going to influence their judgment. So we were talking about the whole planning thing, weren't we, about the fact that if they should sort of plan around how are they going to get home, where are they going to meet their friends. So it's in their mind. And also things like peer pressure. It's worth trying to discuss with them what they might say if they're being pressurised into drinking, or, you know, if there's drugs at a party and they're feeling uncomfortable about that. If they kind of almost rehearse how
how they might want to talk about that and deal with that. I think that's
yes, and
that's,
I think,
really good.
Something that comes, I think it's come through mainly in London teenagers, but maybe other urban places, is vaping, which is what teenagers are into a bit more now than smoking. So that's electronic cigarettes, but a lot of them they buy illegally, or they buy from older friends, and they've got, it's very untested. It's not regulated in the way it should be, the vaping industry. And I know that a lot of mums have been talking to me about that, but I think it's worth finding out about that, looking on the NHS websites. There's also a website called The Mix, which is aimed at young people. And it's really helpful for parents because it's more in a kind of adolescent voice, and it talks, and they actually counsel and work with families as well. So it's worth looking at that so that you can see what kind of drugs they might be taking and how you talk to them.
Another one, a really good one actually, called Talk to Frank. And that's, yes, that gives you, I think it's good to get your kids to look at it, because it literally gives you all the really hard facts and information, but in a very accessible way, about every single kind of drug, from, I don't know, Molly to ketamine. And it'll tell you what it can be cut with, if you mix it with alcohol, what's likely to happen to you.
Also, I think you need to accept that they will get really, really drunk sometimes. No teenager won't do that. I've tried not to be judgmental, and I've tried not to be blaming, and I've tried not to be horrible and horrified with them. If you keep the listening path open, if they can ring you when they feel like they might be in danger. My dad was a policeman, so it was tricky for me, and sometimes he'd come. Do you remember that time when your parents would come pick you up and you'd pretend not to be drunk?
Well, I don't, because I was a bit of a square, but we'll come to that. I didn't really start drinking till I was a lot older.
I am not surprised about that.
Oh, I know. It's so awful.
Well, you do like a drink now, though.
Oh, well, you know, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. But I've remembered the first thing I drank was Pernod in Black. Do you remember that?
Well, there you are.
Oh, my God. That would make you sick. Well, I think that was probably why. And then I think I moved on to cider. That's always a reliable
Lovely.
One. And then Southern Comfort lemonade.
Oh, dear.
Really, really
sugary there.
Sugary. Trish. Basically, sweetie drinks. Sweetie drinks just to try and get over the shock of it. Well.
Now, Trish, tell me, we always get to these three things at the end of our postcards from midlife. What has changed your life this week? I can't wait to tell you mine. You tell me yours first.
Are you sure? Should we do that? Okay. So a friend of mine gave me this lovely little book. It's called The Little Book of Ikigai. Have you heard of Ikigai?
No.
I hope I'm saying that correctly.
Is this one of your Zen yoga malarkey?
It's a little bit Zen. It's actually a sort of Japanese concept that is all about your kind of value and purpose and mission in life, and how you find it. But the book, because Japan, I believe, has incredible longevity, and they have, I think it's one of the islands, Osaka, that has like the happiest people in the world. So so this little book looks at the kind of philosophy of Ikigai, along with interviewing some of these
How does it change your life? How has it changed you?
Well, it's changed me by making me think about all of those things.
Has it made you happier, Trish?
Well,
I feel like you're struggling. Can I tell you what's changed my life this
week? Go on then, go for it.
Fermenting.
Oh, God. What, are you making fermented things?
No,
are you eating fermented things?
To alcohol.
Oh, drinking.
We, in order to feel healthier, have more energy, I got a book called The Gut Doctor, Dr. Megan Rossi. She's a very chirpy Australian, I feel she is. Very good on social media. And we are writing a feature on it, so I thought I would test one of her diet plans, keep you regular. And some, because I've always got things to talk to you about in that area, haven't I?
In the regular area.
In the regular area. And let me tell you, fermenting, it involves eating sauerkraut or 7-hour cabbage fermenting yourself.
Is that delicious? It's not sounding delicious.
No. And, well, you have to eat 30 different plants and vegetables during your week, and that keeps your gut healthy. It's about the microbiome. Well, the gut health is really, really in thing at the moment. There's a nerve called the vagus nerve, which connects your gut to your brain. Anyway, fermenting makes you, eating fermented food, drinks, kefir, drinking that makes your body healthier. I have found very windy.
Doesn't surprise me. It's all churning up down there, isn't it? And touch of the bloat.
Well, my 15-year-old said last night when we were watching the telly, what are you doing there holding your tummy? I said, fermenting. I'm fermenting on the sofa. It's terrible.
And when are you expecting to see the miraculous results?
I don't know, Trish. I don't know. I'm a sucker for these ridiculous things. I actually think this is really well done, this book. And I think someone more sensible than me could probably benefit from it. So the other thing that I'm trying this week is Lizzo. Have you been listening to Lizzo?
Oh, I love her.
Importantly, look at her Instagram. She's she brings me great jolly joy every day. If you have any body issues, look at Lizzo's Instagram. If you have any men issues, look at her Instagram. She's really, in fact, I came to work with such a spring in my step that Alice at work, who's very, very young and fabulous and beautiful, said to me, "You look very jazzy today."
Jazzy?
I'm 21. I don't know where she gets these words from.
Old lady word. Lizzo
made me look jazzy today.
Good.
And then for my nostalgia noodling this week, I've been watching some SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh.
Only because Mabel, who's 8, had discovered it on telly. And I realised that we used to watch it with the older ones, so 10 years before when they... And it was kind of one of the... The only thing I think that you can watch as an adult, you can't watch Teletubbies or any of that stuff. It just sends you mad at 6 a.m. in the morning. But we used to watch a lot of SpongeBob, so it took me back to when the teenagers were little.
Oh, that's nice. Well, talking of cartoons, don't know how on earth it came up. I think I was... actually, it was my son's growing his hair out, and I said, "Oh, you're joining the Hair Bear Bunch. Do you remember Help, It's the Hair Bear Bunch?"
Yes.
Talking of cartoons. Anyway, I still remember the theme tune. Three bears that live in a zoo in somewhere like California. From the 1970s.
Oh, I miss our conversations during the week. Icky Guguru.
Icky Guy. I haven't told you what I've been trying.
What have you
been
trying?
Well, actually, I haven't tried it yet, but I'm going to try it. This is my thing now. I'm going to try it. You probably will as well. Renting clothes. It's a thing,
brilliant, isn't
it?
It's brilliant.
And buy less. Buy less, rent more. And the wonderful Jane Shepherdson, of Reinventing Top Shop fame and whistles and all of that, she's now working with My Wardrobe HQ, which is a wardrobe lending site. And there's another one called Her, spelled H-U-R-R, but I expect pronounced Her, which is more of a peer-to-peer lending site. So it's worth checking out. I'm going to give it a go. I've got a wedding coming up. I'm going to borrow something. I'm going to rent something.
Quite designery things.
Very designery things.
And it's quite cheap. It's like £40 a day or something
It's something like that. And yeah, you just send it back and they dry clean it. And I'm quite excited about
I think
that.
It's brilliant for job interviews. Brilliant for parties, party season, weddings.
Yeah.
It makes such a difference because then you're wearing something different each time and then you don't have that terrible pressure of going into a shop and trying to find the thing.
And if you've got to party two nights in a row with different people, you're just going to get double the bang for your buck.
Two nights in a row.
Well, I met somebody who'd done that. She said, "I wore it last night at this other party," and I was like, she was very pleased with herself. Well, that's it for today, Lorraine. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Postcards from Midlife. In the meantime, if you'd like to send us a postcard, or if you have a question or would like to contact us in any way about any of the topics we've been talking about or your own midlife stories, you can find all of the ways to contact us in the description below.
And if this is your first time listening to our podcast, please do subscribe. Can't wait to talk to you next week. So until then, bye.